Monaco wasn't just Verstappen. It was advanced Verstappen. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Hey gang, I'm Dre Harrison, your friendly neighborhood host, and welcome to the blessed edition of Motorsport 101, episode 444. Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton have come together to form one episode of Motorsport 101. You love to see it. And welcome to our review of the second part of Day of Classics. We actually did it in reverse order this time around. We couldn't help ourselves and get the Indy 500 out of the way first. And thankfully, I can now confirm that my ears have recovered from Monday's taping, because RJ was in fact so loud. Not only did he break Riverside, he also broke Cam Buckley's ears, and he wasn't even on the podcast.
No, I don't. I think that's a good cover story. Actually, what I was doing was pushing an effigy of Rinus VK through a desk fan. I'm driving to his house with a pair of pliers and a blowtorch. I'm so angry.
That is a hell of a way to spend the birthday. Happy belated, by the way, Mr. Buckley.
Yeah, for my birthday, I went out. I had a wonderful burger with one of my best friends. I enjoyed the day off from work, and I watched the Celtics shit themselves on international television.
Well, they can't all be winners. Hey, Cam.
No. You know, we beat the sweep allegations.
But, yes,
that's about it.
Yeah. Like, I know we got swept as a Lakers fan, but at least I can say we probably didn't deserve to lose 4-0. We went down with honor.
It was a close sweep.
It was a close
sweep. If there was such a thing.
It was a weird thing. It's like we were 4-0 swept, but three of the games were competitive, like right into the fourth. And I'm like, this is going to look so much worse than it actually is. But here we are. Welcome to the Western Conference versus Eastern Conference Losers Edition of the podcast. It's just me and Cam on this occasion. It's a very comfy setting for this episode. And shout out to Jason, who's in the chat, also telling me this is my 399th edition of Motorsport 101, where I've hosted the show, which is quite a milestone. So that means, God, probably Formula E, maybe? Or maybe probably F1 in Spain, most likely, will be my 400th show. God, I'm getting old. Matt says, man who turns 31 in August. Here we are. But, we got to talk a little Indy 500 as well, given that you weren't on that one, Cam, obviously celebrating the Boston Celtics' glorious existence. And, if you could talk about it without mentioning Rinus VK for, like, 30 seconds. But, I mean, what did you make of it all?
Honestly... those are my thoughts right there. As the Alex Pillow picker of the podcast, fuck my life.
To be fair,
it was a fun race.
We both picked Pato, so we all came up like completely empty on this. Well, at least your man finished fourth.
Yeah, and it was a hell of a recovery from Pillow, who
magnificent drive.
He was so good. And that was supposed to be the caution that was going to get him, you know, on terms with everyone on fuel.
He
was in smoke. I mean, look, it's about damn time for Joseph Newgarden. It was
absolutely
about damn time. Fantastic drive through the field, kind of out of nowhere.
But he was 17th running to the win. It was crazy.
But he was running up there in the top five for the last, you know, half of the race, just lurking. You know, if you're going to be, if you want to be NASCAR, drop the act like you're better than NASCAR and just make a green-white checker rule.
You might as well at this point. If you're so insistent on finishing a race under green no matter what, like to the point where you're going to dust off one of your ancient rules that you never, ever use to justify a one lap restart at the end.
One that they bypassed in 2020 when the last time Sato won, where they, and a little bit of a different situation, of course, because the pit attenuator got destroyed by the car that ended up hitting it in the caution that ended up ending the race.
Right.
But there was more time left to go and they finished that one under yellow.
Yeah, with five, that, there was five to go when Takuma Sato won that one in 2020, and they were just like, sod it, run the last five under yellow, Takuma's won the 500, basically.
Yeah, and given the nature of the 500, where with these cars, the car in second place is almost always going to have an advantage in a one-lap shootout, while IndyCar did not break any of their own rules, Marcus Ericsson probably does have something to be aggrieved by.
Absolutely. I think I can't blame Marcus for being upset, because the way that race ended, while yes, it is technically in the rule book, IndyCar never ends races that way. Ever.
No. This is a first.
And like the fact that they were like, you cannot tell me as an IndyCar fan, you cannot tell me that you've not copied F1's homework to, you know, by doing something like this. Where you've bent a rule. I mean, okay, technically you've not broken any rules, which is the difference between that and Abu Dhabi, obviously. That's the great unspeakable tragedy.
But they've done. But that's exactly what people ask for them to do in Abu Dhabi, rather than doing what they did. F1 did this in Baku 21.
Yeah.
And
the two-lap restart. Yeah.
One lap. Yeah. It was one lap.
Was it one? Well, I thought it was two.
I swear.
I think it was two.
Was it two?
I think it was two. I think it was a two-lap standing restart.
The sound of Mark Webber's scream appears to have damaged my memory of that race.
The strangled chicken, yes.
The strangled chicken, Mark Webber reacting to the brake magic moment. But I mean, we saw the same thing in Australia as well.
Absolutely.
They threw three standing restarts at them.
Yeah, that was the first F1 race ever with three red flags in it, and it ended on the yellow anyway. Which I think is just the most ironically hilarious thing about that race. That they ran out of laps to play with, basically.
And we ended up getting incredibly lucky, given the nature of the 500, given the fact that the world is now less one Chevy Cruze named Snowball.
Yep.
With that crash.
Thank goodness it ended up there and nowhere infinitely more dangerous.
I was talking to one of my friends who also follows the 500, texting kind of back and forth during the race. And her and I were just kind of mortified at the same time. And then we got into a long, lengthy discussion about what the insurance policy looks like if a tire falls from the sky.
Well, as we said on Top Gear, this is going to need more than that little box. I'm glad that Indianapolis have turned it into a bit of a feel-good story, and they're going to give Rosie, the owner of the her beloved, late beloved Snowball, a new car to compensate for a one in a million event like that, where that tire got fucking yeeted over the catch fence and 100 feet down the fucking road. So absolutely crazy scenes there. And yeah, like I can only echo what Cam was saying, like delighted for Joseph. No one in the field is, I think, in terms of sheer driving quality, has deserved the 500 more than him.
Stop trying to make Santino a thing. You can't make me like him.
Did you listen to Monday's show, Cam, where we actually found out the startling revelation that like there is actually a massive conflict of interest confirmed in that booth?
Oh, where Townsend Bell is just doing it basically to rile up Hinchcliffe?
No, it's the fact that he's Santucci's agent.
Oh. Well, no wonder he seems to go blind every time that he's on screen. Like when that tire left the pit box and all he got was a warning.
It's this fucking sport sometimes. This series, man. Like,
I don't know if it was over the line. I'm like, Townsend, here.
You can't hear it. You can't see it, but Cam is waving his glasses in frustration at the fact that Townsend Bell literally pretended he was blind to defend his client.
Michael Laverty looking ass, as Jason said in the chat.
Absolutely.
Very much so.
Absolutely. Also, just realized we don't normally record of our cameras on when we do these podcasts on Riverside. Like, I'm slowly realizing that Cam, as he gets older, is looking more and more like Julian Ryder.
Call it the Honda Motor Company for nothing. Even though the Honda Motor Company did not sweep Day of Classics, it was a Chevrolet that won. You know, I think they'll take it anyway.
Yeah, I think
I think it should be time now. We've gotten the 500 out of our system. Let's delve into the first part of Day of Classics. Well, it went pretty much exactly as expected.
Yeah, it's just the way that we got there was a bit more complicated than we probably would have anticipated. Mm. But I can't believe I'm saying this. I think we had a good Monaco.
Just add water, question mark?
Who knew? Just add water, and apparently Monaco becomes infinitely more interesting. So we'll be talking all about that, the qualifying lap that was seen around the world. A bad day for the number twos. Well, generally speaking, it's a bad day for the number twos for some people, but unfortunately, in this case, we're talking about Sergio Perez and Lance Stroll.
I think we could throw a little window into Russell and Sainz's days as well, because they also had struggle-icious days.
It's like we had two guys here, and we got two honorable mentions in their own right, because George Russell blew a podium and Carlos Sainz drove like arse. And got away with it for the most part, because it could have been a thousand times worse for Carlos. Wrecked a car early in the weekend, and then bounces off the wall at Mirabeau later on as well. And we got beef, Alpine-related beef, because senior management at the French factory are at loggerheads at the moment. No, I totally didn't rip this off the WTF1 script I just wrote on the YouTube channel. Thumbs up.
This is platform cross-pollination.
All I'm saying is I'm being efficient with the effort I'm putting into my content. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Places you can find us real quick. We are on motorsport101.com if you want to see all of our social media details, all of our profiles on there, and some bonus content, because there's been two more race reviews from yours truly on both this race and the Indy 500 itself. If you want something like 3,500 words in total on both of those, it's a fun time, and I get into a lot more detail about the Indy 500 and what I felt about not only Newgarden winning, which, one more quick side note, IndyCar, promote the fucking bejesus out of this man. He is gold. I cannot tell you again. You blew your chance in 2017, and you've got another chance to do it now.
Market your sport. No.
The most arguably the second most marketable man in your entire series, and first on the list of non-Mexicans, just won your biggest race. Get your shit together, etc. Talking about that, talking about obviously a bit about Monaco and what we're getting into in the podcast right now. And a bunch of other good stuff on there as well. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can at motorsport_101. And if you want to follow our personal handles, you can at Dre_WTF1 and at CBuckley917. RJ, who's currently in France for Le Mans, the lucky bastard, is at RJ O'Connell. And of course, big shout out to Ryan Eric King, the man, the myth, the legend himself, for coming back for Monday's edition of the show there. I will pay for the ear surgery. Forgive me, big man. of course, if you really like us, you can back us financially as well on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all the episodes before they go after the public. You can upgrade to $10 to get access to the supporters club of our Discord server, where you can listen to these episodes live as they are being recorded, as Jason is right now. Shout out to Jason, hope you enjoyed the show, big man. Shall we get into the 2023 Monaco Grand Prix?
Let's
do it. Welcome to the Max Verstappen show. First up, we have to talk about a highlight of the season in general, Monaco qualifying. With 3 minutes to go in Q3, Esteban Ocon shocked the world by placing his Alpine on pole by a nice margin of 0.101. Good time. Very on brand, if I do say so myself. Fernando Alonso took it back briefly, only for Max Verstappen to lay down an incredible final sector, a delta a quarter of a second quicker than the Spaniard, to take his 23rd career pole position. What did you make of the Monaco qualifying drama, Mr. Buckley?
That was a fucking outrageous lap. The demons of Saudi Arabia 21 have been put to bed. This was better, in my opinion. I mean, there is no such thing as a perfect lap, but I don't think we've seen a sector executed as perfectly in all my time watching this dumb sport. I mean, when he turned the car in for the swimming pool and he clipped the wall and didn't break his suspension and then bounced the curb, but controlled it and then hit the wall three more times. I mean, you can't get much more perfect than that.
Right. He was two temps. Yeah.
He rode the final sector.
He was two temps down going into that final sector from Fernando's best time. And you're sitting there thinking, there's no way he can recover two temps in the final split. Not around Monaco, not in a sector that's normally only about 18 seconds long. Like, where do you find the time? And, like, you actually look back on the telemetry. He gained about a temp and a half in the back end of the swimming pool section, then another temp through Raskas. He was inch perfect through those three corners. That's where he won it. It was unbelievable. You saw it.
I mean, I think I said whoa about three times in quick succession as he was flowing the car through, because it's one of those sectors where you just think he's going to crash.
Right, because he's done it. He's crashed there twice before in his career. He's had a knack of going into that outside wall.
One of the arguably the biggest inflection point of his career as a driver was when he threw away what probably would have been a 2018 Monaco win when he binned the car in FP3, just overdriving in a free practice session. Because he just would never shut it off. That was the running theme with him for the first six races of 2018.
Yeah,
he just wouldn't shut it off, and he kept crashing into walls, into people, and just wasting his opportunities. Well, I mean, judging by the paint left on the sidewall of his tires, I don't think he could have said it much more perfectly.
It was a story of his weekend, really. Walking up to the limit, nudging it, but never quite going fully over it.
I would say that final sector was almost like what we describe with Marc Marquez.
Oh, yeah.
With the way he laps, where he's the person who's going to step out into the unknown and find what's out there.
Mm.
And sometimes you come back, sometimes you end up in a ball of carbon fiber. In this case, judged it pretty much perfect and a track where, you know, this was the one that everyone had circled. This is a track where Red Bull, you know, they ended up setting pole and they ended up winning the race, but they did not have their typical, you know, pace advantage. Aston were very quick here. Alpine were very quick here.
Absolutely.
It wasn't a foregone conclusion who was going to end up on pole. And in the end, the driver did make the difference here.
Absolutely. Yes, the Red Bull is a phenomenal car, but I can only echo Cam's sentiments where, yeah, this was the one. If Red Bull was going to lose any race on merit, it was going to be this one. And if it isn't for Max taking the liberties that he did, he qualifies second, Alonso is on pole, and it's a very different race. A very different race, because how do you figure out a way to get around him? Like,
in a car where... Again, the crossover with the way these cars generate lap times, you're not going to get a situation where the Red Bull's advantage is blunted more than this.
No.
And you're not going to get a situation where the Aston is strong, where its advantages are accentuated by a track.
Exactly. It's this war. Like, you could make a solid case that the entire race was determined in that final qualifying sector. That mattered in that final lap, and Max dug deep into his bag of talent and pulled out one big old miracle to finish the job and to keep Red Bull's perfect season alive. Because him being able to dictate the terms of engagement during the race was what pushed Aston Martin into arguably a mistake, arguably miscommunication, but just Fernando just did not have it. Like, we'll get into the race in just a minute, but I mean, you forget that Max Verstappen was able to go 56 laps on the medium tire and still be as quick as anybody else on track.
He brought them to the point where the hards were supposed to start dying out, and he was still clicking off, you know, personal best sectors. It's something that I described with last year's Red Bull, and it's this year's car is everything last year's car was times 10.
Mm.
where it is such an effective and flexible tool. It is fluent in kicking your ass 6 million different ways. It can beat you over a lap. It can beat you in a straight line. It'll beat you into corners. And it's so soft on tires while being able to fire them up. It can fire the tires up without killing them.
Yeah, Go-Go Gadget Swiss Army Knife. It has 5 different ways to beat you. And in case of emergency, you can break the glass and say, oh yeah, we've also got the best driver on the planet right now.
Yeah.
It helps.
we're watching that perfect mix that comes around. You know, we saw it in 2020 with Lewis and the W11, where you absolutely have the best driver in the world at the top of their game with the best team in the world firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
And I said jokingly on this podcast before the season, and got talked down from it, that Red Bull might run the table.
Mm.
If they were going to lose a race on merit, it was going to be this one.
Yeah. There isn't another obvious round that they lose out on paper now.
It's going to take a double DNF.
It's a double DNF or some sort of act of God.
Because, I mean, even the final stages of the race, I mean, you just started ripping pace out of Alonso left and right.
Yeah, even on the inters, Max was still completely dominant. We forget he's a brilliant wet weather driver as well. Again, like, break glass in case of emergency. If the rain comes down, Max is pretty goddamn good there too. Mm. like there is very little holes in the game of Max in the Red Bull RB18 at the moment. He is on a different plane of existence. So let's talk a little bit about that race now that we come to mention it. It was genuinely thrilling when the rain came down with 25 laps to go. Verstappen was comfortably ahead of Alonso by about 8 or 9 seconds until it started raining. Mirabeau and Portier got the worst of it. They were the more heavily affected sections of the track first, with chaos ensuing as teams debated whether to stay out or change for inters. With the rain getting worse, Alonso timed his stop to perfection, but for his dry set of mediums, a mistake that might have cost him the win. Instead, Max would dominate for an easy win, the 39th of his career, and for those keeping score at home, it also means he is Red Bull's all-time wins leader. He has now passed Sebastian Vettel's 38 wins for the energy drink suppliers from Milton Keynes, because Verstappen now has 39.
That feels really weird.
He's 2 away from Ayrton Senna. 2.
Oh, he's going to get there.
He'll probably pass him in Canada. He'll probably tie him in Canada in 2 rounds' time.
Good God. And he is well on his way to his 3rd title as well. I mean, good Lord.
Did Aston Martin's miscommunication cost them the win is what I've got written down here.
Yes.
I'm not so sure, but you know a bit more about the technical side of things than I do, so I'll lead into you for what you reckon.
I don't think it's so much technical. It's just the next lap was so slow. I mean, when the rain came down, it just came crashing down on Sector 2. Actually, Sector 1 and 3 really took a while to actually for the track to get untenable on dry tires.
Right.
But, I mean, the next lap was almost 30 seconds slower out of Max. Aston timed the switch perfectly. And apparently there was a miscommunication in the garage and they bolted on mediums. And that was the death knell for their race, because it basically bailed Red Bull out. I mean, Red Bull, and we're going to get into why their other car ended up being a useful guinea pig later.
Mm.
But they were actually using Sergio basically as the test dummy, as you would if you've got a car that's a couple laps down at Le Mans and the rain's coming down. Well, just start throwing tires at them and see what works.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Red Bull ended up, you know, they got Max onto the inters, and then that was day done. Aston had to come in. And then Max just kind of motored off from there, ended up crossing the line, 28 seconds clear at theoretically their worst track. fuck my life, this car is cracked.
It's like just when you thought that they were at their most vulnerable, it's like, they find a new way to beat you over the head. And with Mjolnir, in this case, it was intermediate pace. Because, oh yeah, Max has got 0.8 of a second the lap on you there too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not super clear cut because no dry to rain transition is.
No.
But given how slow that next lap was, it was more than a pit stop delta that Max lost on his in lap versus what the inter runners were running.
And look, I'm not going to lie. I pull for Aston Martin to a degree, obviously from my Sebastian fan supporting days. They're a good set of people for the most part. You want to see them do well. Even Max has openly admitted, I'd love to see Alonso win again. And I think the entire nation of Spain wants Fernando Alonso to win again. I mean, you forget, we are coming up now to the last place he won a Grand Prix 10 years ago, the 2013 Spanish Grand Prix. Like, you know, it's mad when Carlos Alcaraz is winning games of tennis, the world's number one tennis player, and is writing 33 on the signature end to say, hey, it's a Fernando Alonso reference. Is win 33 coming soon? And side note, Fernando Alonso is in garage number 33 for this weekend. I'm not making this up. Get your jokes in now.
Fighting with driver number 33, or at least he used to be.
Yeah, the max signature number of 33. Yes. It's the second time Aston Martin has blown a genuine chance at winning a race.
Yeah. We roll it back to Hungary 21, where, granted, the only reason they were in that position is because Valtteri Bottas yelled "spare" going into turn one.
Yep, most definitely.
And bowled over just about everyone but his teammate and the left side of Max's car.
Oh yeah,
but they ended up burning out fuel out from Vettel's car because it was going to be raining, which it then dried up immediately, and then they play the strategy right. They give him the undercut, and then they blew his pit stop.
Yep.
And Vettel had to spend the rest of the race pushing. He ended up not only finishing second to Esteban Ocon, who we'll get to in a little bit. He also ends up burning up so much fuel that he gets disqualified from the event because there wasn't enough left to take a sample out of the car. So, you know, this is the second time where Aston has had a legitimate win on the table. And operational errors, whether it was just pure miscommunication or just playing it too safe, have cost them, you know, in the face of teams that are in winning positions every weekend. I'm not going to say Alpine was in 21, but there was also Lewis Hamilton coming at them with a pair of solid rocket boosters blasting on the side of his car.
Oh, yeah. It was like Ghost Rider by the last five laps of that race. Like, you will pay a penance for making me restart a race on my own on the grid. And if that race was two laps longer, Lewis Hamilton wins.
Yeah. I mean, it was like 7 or 8 seconds a lap quicker than the front two by the end of the race. But yeah, Aston will be happy with the P2. And Lord, they need it, given how much their second driver is stinking up the joint.
Oh, yeah. Like, we'll get to that very shortly. But
But it's a question of what could have been. And this is probably, on merit, their last chance this year.
Probably. On paper, barring, again, something catastrophic happening in the Red Bull camp. They will, like, in theory, they probably won't get a better chance than this one. And, yeah, they blew it. There's no other way of describing it. Unfortunately, they blew this one. And it's a shame because Fernando Alonso is driving so well at the moment. He's been flawless all season long. He's not put a foot wrong, really, all year. And his average finish right now in F1 is 3. That's championship form in most years.
It's 3, and he's getting shot to pieces every week by Red Bull.
His average finish is exactly 3, only because Max Verstappen's right now is 1.33.
That's also on brand. There's nothing you can do about that.
No. It's virtually unstoppable. If Max gets a clean run, he has won every race so far this season, except for the two times he didn't was the drive shaft failure in Jeddah and a screw job pit strategy call in Baku and a rare mistake from Hannah Schmidt, who is one of the best in the biz, who got it wrong in Baku.
The only one on pace that's even been in question was Baku.
Right.
Because he was monstrously quick in Saudi Arabia. It's just he was fighting back from scenic fucking nowhere.
Right. Unbelievable at the moment. And yeah, Max is virtually unstoppable. Fernando is driving as well as he ever has, and there is nothing he can do about it. And he's, amazingly, through all this, he's only 12 points behind Sergio Perez in the championship right now.
There's a very good reason for that.
Should we talk about some of the backup drivers that didn't have such a good time this weekend? Because there was a few.
Yeah, not a good weekend for second drivers. I mean, Sergio Perez's entire weekend was derailed by a gigantic crash at Sandoval in Q1, which also exposed the underside of the RB19 to the entire world.
And that was the second time this has happened that weekend, because it happened to Lewis Hamilton in FP3 as well.
Three, yeah. Happened to the Ferrari as well.
Yeah.
We've seen all three floors.
Everyone's just baring their ass for the public all of a sudden. Like, come look at my stomach, baby. Three times this weekend, everybody's flaws are now being exposed to the world.
Difference is, Dre, I don't think anyone's trying to copy the Mercedes floor. You know, side pods are one of the most innovative things I've ever seen in my time watching F1. But enough about the Lotus 72. You know, he started from the back. He recovered to 16th after a pretty messy race.
Scruffy.
Lance Stroll stunk. Mm-hmm. He lost vital time in Q2 after missing the weight bridge. As Vettel fans, we know all about that.
Ugh.
He started 14th, and then he crashed at the Lowe's hairpin. Hit the
wall multiple times. Yeah, while he was on Intis, he was on the better tire in the race scenario, and he clattered into the race. He clattered into the Lowe's hairpin, and then clattered into the outside wall at Portier, and then that was his day done.
And before we get into the two that we're going to roast at length, also to say Carlos Sainz, what the fuck was that? He drove into the back of Ocon and trashed his front wing, and then was on the correct strategy, got switched up in the rain, got fucked over by the rain, and then, went flying off the road, and ended up finishing behind his teammate despite outpacing Leclerc in Monaco all weekend, which is no small feat.
It's an incredible accomplishment from Sainz until he blew it for himself, really. Yeah. And salute to George Russell, who pretty much did the same when he went wide and had to go down the old Nico Rosberg escape road at Mirabeau, and then clattered into Sergio Perez when he rejoined the clack.
Rejoined directly into Sergio's path and got T-boned. Good job, bud.
Great job. 5-second time penalty for you and a blown shot at a podium.
Yeah. Which number two is in hotter water right now?
Sergio, I'd like to think Sergio has built up enough goodwill that we're not going to completely eviscerate him over this. My man just gave me the Uncle Phil we right there. Lance Stroll is now 66 points behind Fernando Alonso after 6 rounds this year. 66.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable. I'm sorry. It's just... And you know what the worst part about this is? He actually earned some goodwill at the start of this season when he finished 6th in Bahrain with a broken toe and, you know, 2 heavily damaged wrists. Coming off of, 1 week of recovery after his initial biking accident?
Yeah, that was broken wrist, broken toe.
I can't remember the last time people had spoke so highly of Lance Stroll and his determination to, this might be an evolution in Lance as a driver. He certainly gained some respect in the paddock, most definitely. I mean, hell, my day job employees made a whole last video talking about, is this going to be the turnaround for Lance Stroll? And, well... No, really?
Not by a damn sight. And it's just aggravating because when you look at Lance Stroll, he feels like a driver, and I've been saying this for a couple of years, feels like he's regressing rather than progressing. Where in 2020, there was legitimate upside to Lance Stroll as a driver. He didn't get pole in Turkey by mistake.
None.
And he's always been terrific in the wet.
Absolutely.
He was atrocious this weekend when the rain came down. And he just has these lapses in concentration where he's driving fine, and then he does something completely inexplicable, and you just go, what the fuck was that?
Right. And look, I didn't expect him to give Fernando Alonso an honest fight. Like, that's probably too high an expectation for Lance, because Fernando Alonso is still... I mean, he was excellent when he was at Alpine. He's still proven that he is an absolute top-end quality driver in the last 2 years since coming back from his WEC adventures. But this is the thing. We are no longer... you can get away with Lance Stroll being mid in a midfield team to a degree because points are less valuable in those sorts of positions, generally speaking. This year, I think, is a bit of an outlier because the top five seem pretty much locked in terms of pace between Red Bull, Aston, Mercedes, Ferrari, and Alpine. They are the big five. Everybody else seems to be fighting for scraps at the moment. However, you are no longer... Like,
not even a midfield team.
You're not a midfield team anymore. You are now a potential contender. You are the second best team in Formula One, I think, on raw pace.
And big news since the last time we spoke.
Mm.
Going into 2026, they will be the Honda factory team.
You are about to inherit the best power unit in Formula One.
Yeah.
You haven't got an excuse at this point.
Because that is the rock upon which they must build their church. Because now, you are no longer beholden to Mercedes and the choices they make with the components that they sell you. You are no longer beholden to their power unit, which is still good, but it's the least good of the front runners.
Right.
You're doing this for one reason, one reason only. You want to win championships. You don't become a factory team in Formula One to make up the numbers.
No.
It's not the name of the game. You do it because you want to contend at the very top. And Red Bull has expressed genuine regret. I mean, Max is genuinely sad that they have lost Honda because it's no given factor that the Red Bull powertrains engine with the Ford stickers on it is going to be any good.
No.
Honda has become that proven quantity, that known... You know, they are going to give you a power unit that is going to bust up everyone around you now.
Right. You're no longer going to have your... Yeah, you're not going to have your handheld anymore. You're on your own from 2026 onwards, essentially. Like, yeah. I know, like, Ford's not bringing much to the table here outside brand partnerships.
If you're Aston Martin and Lance Stroll continues to do this, where he is... I mean, Vettel was 1.9 feet out the door for last year, and he was still beating the brakes off of Stroll for most of the season.
Yeah, he had no incentive to drive as well as he did in the back half of 2022, and yet was still comprehensively better than Lance.
I mean, when we saw Lance, I mean, try to trigger an airplane crash in COTA.
Mm.
And it's not just the pace. Because Lance has good days on pace, he has bad days on pace. The fuck was he doing into the hairpin, trying to pass Albon and just drove himself into the wall twice?
The man still has no spatial awareness. Like, this is a guy, this is like, I need to make this point. This is year 7 for Lance Stroll. Year 7.
We've crucified drivers for less.
We've completely obliterated drivers for far less egregious shit, who never got anywhere near to 140 career starts, because Lance is coming up to 130 on the amount of races. He's at 125 Grand Prix, and he is still making rookie mistakes.
There's no excuse. I mean, his first time in Monaco was better than what we saw on Sunday, and it's... I used to be one of the biggest Lance defenders, you know, in our little... roving band of motorsport journalism. But the excuses are running out. And when they are now 1 point ahead of Mercedes in the World Constructors Championship, and the Mercedes is shit.
It's not a good race car. I don't care what you tell me.
They completely redesigned it. We have finally got side pods, all new floor, all new front suspension, and they were no better than they have been.
No.
And you have Lewis and Russell more or less coming out and saying, yeah, it's an improvement, but it's ultimately a fairly small step.
Right.
It's the first in a long journey back to the top for Mercedes. There's no excuse why this Aston, which is a superb race car, is 1 point ahead of them in the constructors. That speaks to the quality of the driver lineup that Mercedes has. I mean, 7-time world champion Lewis fucking Hamilton will do that for you.
It was excellence all weekend.
Who was doing his damnedest to try and wring everything he could out of that car. And George Russell, who for all of what we just roasted him with, still made a net gain up to P5.
Yeah.
Alonso's not going to be able to do it all if one of those other teams, be it Ferrari, who have massive upgrades for Spain, or Mercedes, we know what they're capable of over a season and in-season development.
Absolutely.
If they start getting ahead of steam.
Ultimately, Aston Martin are still a customer team here. I don't think Aston Martin will be able to hold on to this second over the course of the whole season because Mercs will spearhead
one
their
car
own
will.
Them.
But I think one car absolutely
Alonso,
will.
Yeah, I was going to say, Alonso is single-handedly putting the whole team on his back like Greg Jennings in a game of Madden 12, while at the same time, Lance Stroll is an anchor. He is opening the gap for teams like Ferrari, Mercedes, and Alpine to punish them week in and week out. They should be in a rock-solid second place right now, given the form of Aston Martin all year long, and Stroll is keeping the door open for them to be vulnerable.
It's one thing if you're not, you know, scooping up podiums like Alonso is. It's quite another to be not even sniffing points before you crash out of the race.
Oh, yeah.
And that's been Lance on a couple of occasions this year. But enough about Lance Stroll.
Checo.
What the fuck was that, Sergio? Now, let me set the stage for you. The king of the streets, as they call him. Yeah, okay.
Sure.
He crashed the car in Q1, pushing way too hard into turn one on what is ultimately an inconsequential session for maybe the best Formula One car we've seen in years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe at this rate, it might be the best one we've ever seen relative to its competition. It's obnoxiously busted. Why are you pushing that hard in Q1?
He was probably 5 or 6 miles an hour too fast going through that apex before clattering into that Sandoval wall and wrecked his car and led to them being craned away. I still think to a degree that the Sergio Perez street circuit moniker is a little bit coincidental more than it is Perez being this street circuit god. Yes, his driving style is a little bit more conducive towards street circuits.
It's Baku.
Yeah,
it's
Baku. He's the best driver ever around Baku. And that's okay. That's cool. It's a nice little feather in the cap to have. Charles Leclerc is also stupidly good around Baku. It happens, right? But the thing is that I don't think anybody really explicitly thought that Perez, again, is going to give Max a go over a season. I still wonder how much of this is our own silly hope. And look, I hold my hands up now as a fully fledged professional journalist. I've been told to make videos specifically to stir up this fucking pot, almost through shame, because I know in the back of my head that I know he hasn't got a prayer, but I have to try and use whatever intangible argument I can make to make it seem like he's got a chance. I'm starting to think the street circuit thing is purely a fucking coincidence, because this is not good enough.
This is the second time this year that he has he's come into qualifying on the back foot, because look, Max is driving out of his mind right now.
Absolutely.
This car, and I think some of it was last year's car, because last year's car early on in the season, we know that because of its limitations on how they could distribute the weight, it just suited Checo more than Max. Max likes the pointiest car you've ever seen. You know, Alex Albon talking about how it's like playing Call of Duty on max sensitivity.
Yeah.
And
great quote.
This car gives Max that driving style. He can use all of what he is as a driver to generate the lap time. And there's times where Sergio's just not going to be able to live with that. And we all need to be able to live with that. And this is now the second time, first time was in Australia, where he just came into qualifying and just crashed the fucking car. Just driving way, way too hard into a corner. And trying to live with speed through the apex, and or in, not even at the apex yet. You know, trying to live with speed into the corner that the car just wouldn't live with.
But why are you doing that in Q1?
It's Q1.
Why?
At Monaco.
I know Q1 is, I know like Monaco is very close in terms of time because it's such a short lap and it mitigates a lot of car performance, but you could stroll, pardon the pun, stroll into Q2. It's an inconsequential
session, Dre.
Absolutely. It's completely unacceptable for a driver of his caliber.
Yeah, it's not like he's new at this. He's been here for well over a decade and he's had some great times in Monaco. He's had some really shit ones too. I mean, his first time in Monaco ended up with him not taking part. That crash into the chicane, which, geez, I still remember like yesterday. But there's another part of this plot line where no one's pining for pictures of the Mercedes floor. No one is pining for pictures of the Ferrari. No, you outed the underside of the Red Bull, where that is where they make all the money. That is where the Red Bull visibly makes every other car look almost prehistoric.
Oh yeah, it is. It's the money shot. It's Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct. It's the money shot.
A man of culture, I see.
Showing my age a little bit there, but yeah.
But I mean, I like to think I have a pretty decent grasp on the technical side of F1 cars. And I look at the underside of the Rebel, I have no idea what the fuck's going on. That is completely beyond me. You can kind of eyeball wind tunnel what other floors are doing. This thing is like alien technology, visibly compared to every other car. You think every other team has got their hands on those pictures right now? Dumping every resource that they can muster into analyzing what makes that car tick?
And every team out there trying to snatch anyone close to Adrian Newey in that camp. I mean, we've already, much has been made of Dan Fallows already at Aston Martin. You got another big one in the news a couple of days ago with Rob Marshall going to McLaren next year, who was, again, one of Adrian's right-hand people and has been there from the start.
One of the chief architects, so we've heard through the grapevine, of Red Bull's 2026 project when we get the regulation reset. He was, you know, more or less in charge of that project as far as we know. So there's a very good reason why every image of the RB19 has been treated like gold. And you've just given them the entire underside of the car, or one half of the underside of the car. The other half was destroyed because you crashed it that hard. It's not just that you've scored a big fat zero for the weekend. Max has scored 25 points, and now all the pressure is off in the title race. Max can fuck around for the rest of the year.
39 back now.
He's probably not going to drop 39 points for the rest of the year. I said that last year in jest, and then he actually fucking did it.
Yeah, exactly. Like there is a reasonable chance Max doesn't give up 39 points between now and the end of the year. Like, barring contact or other shenanigans, like reliability, maybe, we never know. But like, as it stands,
it's not just that, Dre.
Yeah,
it's that he's not only done that, he has potentially, so we need to see how it plays out, he's potentially outed Red Bull's design secrets to the world, which affects their long-term prospects in the sport.
Right.
It's not good.
Yeah, that could have serious ramifications down the road in regards to Red Bull's seat at the top of the pantheon right now in this sport. And Perez just gave the game away. That was the biggest mistake he's made at Monaco since seeing the nice girl at the after party last year. So I can't believe I just said that.
I mean, you're not wrong, but yeah, no, I'll let you cook. I'll let you go.
But I love that Jason in the chat also goes, the streets won't forget this failure. Which, yeah, is a pretty adequate way of summing that up, really, I suppose. Mm. Not the best of days for the number two mans in a lot of the top end, pretty much all the top end seats this weekend in Formula One.
Okay, Pierre Gasly, where were you, bud?
He'll like seventh is like the least egregious problem with an Alpine across the big five teams over the course of this weekend. However, on the other end, shout out to Esteban Ocon, third place. What a result that! I think a lot of people have forgotten that Esteban Ocon is seriously a seriously good driver. You know, how many times you hear about Ocon making a mistake or having a bad weekend? Or like
safest pairs of hands in the sport, honestly.
Absolutely. And again, just brilliant all weekend long, qualified superbly, held on to his pace, withstood the pressure of Sainz behind him, you know, defended perfectly, drove on to get a brilliant podium. It should ease a little bit of the pressure because we have beef, hot steaming beef off the grill regarding Alpine's upper management at the moment, because if you've been keeping track of this since Baku, Alpine CEO Laurent Rossi is, what's the French word for it? Pissed at the moment, at how things are going at the moment. He laid into the French team. This was the bulk of these comments came after Miami, where he basically said Bahrain was amateurish. He said that Baku was unacceptable, not good enough after Pierre Gasly's car decided to announce a new pope. Basically, you know, Bahrain, the Ocon hat-trick of penalties, the rare bad weekend for Esteban. He has very much ramped up the pressure on Otmar Szafnauer, the team principal, basically saying that, we can't afford to do this. We can't afford to keep doing this. You keep making the same mistakes over and over again. And Otmar responded when we got to Monaco this past weekend, and he basically said, look, everyone around us that's won recently has done so on five-year plans. Like when Mercedes bought out Braun, it took them 5 years to consistently win. When Red Bull bought Jaguar, it took them 5 years to consistently win from the midfield. And he even talked about Aston Martin, how essentially they've gone from seventh best team to second or third best team, and this is year five of Lawrence Stroll.
Mid 2018.
Yeah, this is
over
year
5 years.
Yeah, this is year five of Lawrence Stroll having an ownership stake in the team. And ironically, he mentioned Laurent Rossi, who it's hard not to draw like parallels between when Carlos Ghosn, do crime, was CEO of then Renault. He talked about the five-year plan. The five-year plan to make, you know, Renault title contenders, and now that spectacularly failed. And then Laurent Rossi comes in and calls it a 100 race plan.
I say, we're in a, what, year seven of that original five-year plan?
Yeah, we are.
They got a race win.
Yeah, like they got one race win. They got one race win to their name. And as Otmar pointed out, this is race 27 of the 100 race plan to, like, because Laurent Rossi, when he came in as CEO, basically said they want Alpine regularly on the podium by 2024, like basically the end of next year, a 100 race plan from the time he took over as CEO, essentially. Now, with all this beef, and Otmar, the snappiest comment being, I've been in this sport for 25 years. I know what it takes. With Ocon scoring that podium, who's in the right at Alpine, Cam?
Would you be mad at me if I said I don't know? I just don't know. This team remains a conundrum because it feels like they're always, like, since rebranding as Alpine, I'd say since 2020, I would say, when the last year is Renault.
Yeah.
They're always just ticking a little bit further up all the time, where it feels like, you know, every upgrade they bring inches them a little closer to the front. But that's just it. It's inches.
Right.
And not so much that their power unit is bad, so much as it is the least good now, because I don't think there's a truly awful power unit in F1 anymore. But for a long fucking time, it was Renault's.
Oh, yeah.
They were the ones who championed these regulations more than anyone else, and then they got their pants pulled down.
Absolutely.
Blown into the weeds. And at no stage in this engine regulation set have they had the best power unit.
None.
Maybe once or twice in Mexico at the ultra high altitude. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, while their engine is, I would say, the least bad rather than actively terrible, because we're in an engine freeze, there's not really a lot they can do about that. And last year, their reliability was piss poor. It's called a spade. They left so many points on the table, just burning through power units, burning through water pumps. This year, that's better.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like the chassis, again, has taken another step. But then you have Aston, who, with their new technical structure, have just leapfrogged everyone.
Yeah.
Except for Red Bull, of course.
I'd argue they are probably the biggest victims of Aston Martin.
Of course.
Making the gains that they have, because it's now shoved Alpine back down to fifth when they have made genuine strides in beating McLaren in the race for fourth last year.
To say nothing of the state of McLaren, who they were jumping up and down for points until there was, oh, Alpine just scored a bundle on us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's just that car, even the B-spec McLaren, so piss poor, there's nothing they can really do.
21 points this weekend compared to what, McLaren's 3? That's a hammer blow, given the state of the field right now. Like that wipes out any gains they had made in Australia.
But the whole problem is Alpine was in that position to begin with. Because, I mean, we saw what happened in Australia where they hit each other.
Oh, yeah.
They've left a bunch of points on the table again, some through operational, some from, again, poor reliability in Baku, where Gasly's engine just grenaded. It just feels like they're always making progress, but they're never making that big leap up. Not since their fairly poor year by their own standards in 2019.
Absolutely. I also love how self-indulgent Laurent Rossi was, because he was with the team this weekend at Monaco. And he claimed it was his words that had turned the team around in Monaco and got them that podium finish. Okay. Whatever you say, big man.
This car is very good. It's just, again, it's the least good of the front runners rather than, you know, the Ferrari has a lot of problems, but it has legitimate upsides. Ditto with the Mercedes, although fewer upsides with the Mercedes right now. But on just the pure merit of the cars, you're not touching the Red Bull. And further back from them, you're not touching the Aston under normal circumstances, unless you're Lance Stroll, in which you stink.
Right. And Alonso's good enough where that doesn't matter at that point, really, for now, at least. And yeah, it's a weird beef. Like, Laurent Rossi is, like, I don't see what you gain in throwing the team under the bus when there is a viable explanation for their struggles, i.e. Aston Martin. No, I don't think anybody predicted Aston Martin making the gains that they've made this year.
We didn't, but we thought they were glory. Some of us thought they were glory running in preseason testing.
They weren't, like, at all. And if you look throughout the way this season has played out, there's been multiple races this year where Alpine has punched well above its weight in race running. Like Miami, we had Gasly running up there for a good while. Was a little bit unlucky, made a couple of small mistakes, but you know, it wasn't a bad time for Alpine. In Australia, Gasly ran most of that race in the top five until that final restart.
I don't know how much, Dre, that's punching above their weight. I think that's where they should be on merit.
A good weekend, and they can mix it up with Mercedes and Ferrari now.
Yeah, they can hang on to their coattails. It's just, there's nothing they can do about Aston. I don't think you think Mercedes feels good right now being clubbed by a customer team?
Right.
No. You think Ferrari feels good right now watching Fernando Alonso, who spent years trying to win a title with them. Right now, he's got a better average finish with Aston than I think he ever did with Ferrari. It just doesn't matter in the face of, you know, the overwhelming dominance of the RB19 and the man piloting it. I'm kind of in your camp. I don't think there's anything to gain by throwing the team under the bus when, until the new engine regulations, this is kind of just where they are.
Yeah, I'm not seeing where Alpine's going to suddenly make a 3 or 4 tenths a lap gain that would really put them up there with, like, Aston Martin is like the second best team in the field.
They've got to make up their whole deficit on the power unit side and then on the chassis side. I think their chassis is very solid. I mean,
yeah, I think it's good.
Low to medium speed, they were as quick as Aston Martin were around this track.
Yeah, their blessing is that I don't think they're a million miles away. Like I know one of their technical guys said they reckon they're going to beat Mercs and Ferrari next time out in Spain this weekend. And I wanted to laugh at them, and I was like, I can't really do that because I don't think it's that lofty a goal anymore.
I think it's almost, their car in a lot of ways is almost like a more primitive Red Bull in a lot of its traits. One of those is that it's really kind to its tires. If they can use that in Spain, there's no reason to why they can't do that.
Yeah, but Spain one of the biggest tire wear tracks we go to.
Oh, I think Red Bull's going to lap everyone up to like sixth fucking place. I think it's going to be obnoxious. But what Alpine can't keep doing is putting themselves in a big enough hole that the inherent quality of their drivers and car ends up not mattering. We've seen them make mistakes. We've seen those drivers make mistakes. Esteban is usually very solid, but he can drop a clunker every now and again. Gasly's been ridiculously up and down.
Yeah, very erratic. Like, on paper, every bit as good as Ocon at his best. Mm-hmm. His bad days have been dreadful.
Yeah. Too reminiscent of his time at Red Bull, honestly, where he had a couple good days in Red Bull, but they were outweighed by the really awful days where you see Verstappen lapping him, or you see him crashing into, midfield team cars. Until 2026, it's hard to see them making that big leap unless they find something really special on the chassis side of the car. And while Team Enstone has always built a good chassis, it's been a while since they've built a truly great one.
And that's probably what it's going to take. And the way the way the sport's going at the moment, it's going to be hard for them to do it. It's going to be hard for them to make gains. This is the most competitive Alpine has been in the Team Enstone guy since probably 2013, I would say. Yeah. And
ever since they were Lotus and they were saving a pit stop on everyone, and Romain Grosjean, remember him,
yeah,
was throwing hands with Sebastian Vettel around Asian tracks.
Yeah,
it's been a long fucking time.
Absolutely. And I don't see an obvious place where they can get better, because like you said, their chassis is generally pretty good. Their power unit, yeah, okay, it's probably the weakest in the field, but it's not by a long shot. It's, you know, it's negligible.
It's near where Mercedes are, but their reliability is still a little suspect.
Yeah.
But you can't improve that. We're in an engine freeze. You're stuck with what you've got for at least the next 3 years.
Exactly. And you've got two pretty good drivers. Esteban Ocon is a very, very good driver, a very safe pair of hands, and we've seen the upside of Pierre Gasly, and when it's there, it's glorious. He's a fantastic upside driver. He's a very high-ceiling guy.
That's a very good reason why both of them are race winners.
Absolutely. And there's not an obvious place where this team can massively improve, and I hope Lauren Rossi's got the patience to understand that, because it's going to be hard for them to make big gains on, like, this. This is the big boys league now, Alpine. Like, this is what it's going to have to take if you want to stay in this spot. Like, you haven't got a groundbreaking upgrade that's going to make you suddenly gain half a second compared to the previous year. You're now in the thick of it with the best this sport has to offer. Like, this is kind of where you should be as a team right now.
This is where you fought up from, you know, from the depths 20 years ago. And eventually you did get there and you did nail home two championships. But it's a different sport now.
100%. And hey, we'll have to wait and see how they fare in Spain. That is going to be this weekend's race. The end of what we thought was going to be a triple header, as Cam alluded to. Red Bull's probably going to run the field over. But hey, at least the final chicane's gone.
Yeah, you took away the three corners that their car might not suit and replace it with one big one that it will.
Yay!
Oh, God.
May the good Lord help us all. Loaded weekend of motorsport this weekend. We've got three episodes next week to get through. We're going to have Formula One and the Spanish Grand Prix. We're going to have IndyCar and its brand new street circuit in Detroit. And we're going to see how that goes down, the traditional post-500 hangover race, as I like to call it, on the streets of the new streets of Detroit track, I should say, which is, if you'd like 90-degree corners, you're in luck, because that new track's got plenty of them. And we've got Formula E there back after their mid-season break. They'll be at Jakarta over in Indonesia.
Also, of course, one of the reasons why our co-host isn't here, we've also got prep for Le Mans.
Oh, absolutely.
See what we can do to get some content out about that big year for Le Mans. Big BOP change, despite, you know, what the ACO said about not changing the BOP. Probably a good thing, but probably not the right way to go about it.
Yes, yeah, it's probably a good thing, but you might have pissed off your number one team in the process. Yeah. You pissed off Coach Kamui. That has consequences in these parts, etc. So, almost certainly, I will likely be run down and stuffed in a locker and be told by my co-host, Dre, we're doing the Le Mans preview and that's final. And I will probably cave in because I'm a soft bitch. So look forward to that sometime next week, as well as a bunch of other races. Again, so it's like I said, IndyCar in Detroit, F1 Grand Prix in Spain almost certainly will be on the docket as well. We'll see what we do about Formula E, because we didn't do one in Monaco. So we'll probably stuff them together and maybe put them out in a quieter week. Most likely we'll catch up with that as well. So a whole heap of content coming to the M101 network real soon. I hope you guys sit back and enjoy. It's going to be a fun time over the next couple of weeks here, so look forward to that. But like I said, basically you can find us one more time, motorsport101.com is our website. Check us out, all our social media is over there. Again, motorsport _101 on Twitter, at Dre_WTF1, at CBuckley917 for all of that as well. Patreon.com/Motorsport101 if you want to back us on there. But until next time, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cam Buckley. And until next time, sayonara.
Free my boy Chase. Denny had it coming.
Cam, since when did you join NASCAR's marketing department?
Last week.
That checks out.